There are two parts to the test. Part 1.
I'm Jack Nkosi, and today we're interviewing author Yasmin Aslam, who is writing a book called The Game of Health. It's about a video game, a virus, and the scientists who studied them. How can a video game give us insight into how diseases spread? We hope to get to the bottom of that mystery today. Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jack. I'm happy to be here.
Now, your book is going to be about an advance in virology, the study of viruses. But you say that your book isn't really going to be for scientists?
Well, yes, and that's because the book will mainly be about a video game. I'm focusing on an incident that occurred in a huge online game called World of Warcraft. It's one of those games where players make their own characters who interact with each other in the virtual world of the game.
One of those big online role-playing games.
Right. So, in what's called the Corrupted Blood incident, game designers introduced a virtual virus into World of Warcraft. And when the virus spread, it acted in ways the game designers didn't expect. It really took on a life of its own. They accumulated data as the virus spread, and in the end, they learned a lot about how real people spread diseases.
Right. That's the heart of the matter, isn't it? Can you give a little background on what happened? I mean, they didn't want half the characters in their game to die, I assume.
No, absolutely not. In fact, it was an accident, a bug in the software. The code for the virtual virus had errors. Game characters who were infected became much sicker than intended. Other characters were infected, and eventually many of them died. So the company that controls the World of Warcraft game, Blizzard Entertainment, monitored what was happening with the virus. They weathered a storm of criticism from their players. Finally, they just reset the game because so many characters had died.
Got it. So, how did this become something that scientists learned from?
Well, a professor at Tufts University, Dr. Nina Pfefferman, took an interest in the incident. She noticed a lot of similarities between this virtual outbreak and real-world outbreaks of diseases like bird flu and SARS. For example, the World of Warcraft disease could affect both human and non-human creatures. Likewise, some characters in the game contracted the virus but showed no symptoms. This happens in the real world, too. And also, the virus first cropped up in an isolated area and was carried to high population areas.
Right. Did Blizzard Entertainment think about having a quarantine?
Yes, they did. Most of your listeners probably know that in real life, ill people may be kept isolated, away from healthy individuals. This quarantine lasts until the ill person can no longer infect other people. But in real life, quarantines don't always work, and they didn't work in the World of Warcraft either. Curious game characters rushed into an affected area to check it out. Once they saw what the in-game illness did, they rushed back out, and they brought the virus with them.
Oh, just like...
journalists. Dr. Pfefferman pointed out that in real life, journalists behave like those game characters. They sometimes rush into affected places to cover news and then leave. They become carriers of the illness that way. Curiosity killed the cat, you know? Except hopefully no one dies in real life.
Okay, but does this online game incident really predict how we can prevent diseases from spreading in the real world?
Well, scientists hypothesize that it does. Of course, it's unethical to release a virus into a real population to study its effects, and no one would want to do that. But a virtual world using mathematical models? Perfect. No one actually gets harmed, and we can obtain some important insights. People's poor choices in the game, like ignoring quarantines, wandering into affected areas, things like that, have taught public health officials to get involved in a serious disease early and set up parameters for a strict quarantine. That lesson is key.
So, the more we learn about saving virtual lives, the more human lives we can save in the real world.
Right. And that's why I'm writing The Game of Health. We never know where our next insight is going to come from. Anyone with an idea that could help others should take it and run with it, like Dr. Pfefferman did.
Good point. Now, I'm sure our listeners have lots to ask you. We're in good shape for time, so we'll take some questions from callers after this break. Listeners, don't keep your questions bottled up. Give us a call.
Listen again.
I'm Jack Nkosi, and today we're interviewing author Yasmin Aslam, who is writing a book called The Game of Health. It's about a video game, a virus, and the scientists who studied them. How can a video game give us insight into how diseases spread? We hope to get to the bottom of that mystery today. Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jack. I'm happy to be here.
Now, your book is going to be about an advance in virology, the study of viruses. But you say that your book isn't really going to be for scientists?
Well, yes, and that's because the book will mainly be about a video game. I'm focusing on an incident that occurred in a huge online game called World of Warcraft. It's one of those games where players make their own characters who interact with each other in the virtual world of the game.
One of those big online role-playing games.
Right. So, in what's called the Corrupted Blood incident, game designers introduced a virtual virus into World of Warcraft. And when the virus spread, it acted in ways the game designers didn't expect. It really took on a life of its own. They accumulated data as the virus spread, and in the end, they learned a lot about how real people spread diseases.
Right. That's the heart of the matter, isn't it? Can you give a little background on what happened? I mean, they didn't want half the characters in their game to die, I assume.
No, absolutely not. In fact, it was an accident, a bug in the software. The code for the virtual virus had errors. Game characters who were infected became much sicker than intended. Other characters were infected, and eventually many of them died. So the company that controls the World of Warcraft game, Blizzard Entertainment, monitored what was happening with the virus. They weathered a storm of criticism from their players. Finally, they just reset the game because so many characters had died.
Got it. So how did this become something that scientists learned from?
Well, a professor at Tufts University, Dr. Nina Pfefferman, took an interest in the incident. She noticed a lot of similarities between this virtual outbreak and real-world outbreaks of diseases like bird flu and SARS. For example, the World of Warcraft disease could affect both human and non-human creatures. Likewise, some characters in the game contracted the virus but showed no symptoms. This happens in the real world, too. And also, the virus first cropped up in an isolated area and was carried to high population areas.
Right. Did Blizzard Entertainment think about having a quarantine?
Yes, they did. Most of your listeners probably know that in real life, ill people may be kept isolated, away from healthy individuals. This quarantine lasts until the ill person can no longer infect other people. But in real life, quarantines don't always work, and they didn't work in the World of Warcraft either. Curious game characters rushed into an affected area to check it out. Once they saw what the in-game illness did, they rushed back out, and they brought the virus with them.
Oh, just like...
journalists. Dr. Pfefferman pointed out that in real life, journalists behave like those game characters. They sometimes rush into affected places to cover news and then leave. They become carriers of the illness that way. Curiosity killed the cat, you know? Except, hopefully, no one dies in real life.
Okay, but does this online game incident really predict how we can prevent diseases from spreading in the real world?
Well, scientists hypothesize that it does. Of course, it's unethical to release a virus into a real population to study its effects, and no one would want to do that. But a virtual world using mathematical models? Perfect. no one actually gets harmed, and we can obtain some important insights. People's poor choices in the game, like ignoring quarantines, wandering into affected areas, things like that, have taught public health officials to get involved in a serious disease early and set up parameters for a strict quarantine. That lesson is key.
So, the more we learn about saving virtual lives, the more human lives we can save in the real world.
Right. And that's why I'm writing The Game of Health. We never know where our next insight is going to come from. Anyone with an idea that could help others should take it and run with it, like Dr. Pfefferman did.
Good point. Now, I'm sure our listeners have lots to ask you. We're in good shape for time, so we'll take some questions from callers after this break. Listeners, don't keep your questions bottled up. Give us a call.
Now look at part two.
Money. It's one of the greatest creations of human history and has played a positive role in the development of modern civilization. However, we haven't always used money. If we look back, say, more than 3,000 years ago, which is when coins first appeared, we would find that most people conducted business using a system of direct exchange called barter. For instance, I might exchange my 5 chickens for your 3 sheep. That's barter. Today, I'll be talking about some advantages of money over barter, how money has undergone change over time, and the benefits of money. Okay, in early societies, land and agriculture provided the main forms of wealth and power. How? Because only landowners could grow large amounts of food and raise large amounts of animals, such as cattle and sheep. Although people could carry out limited business transactions by bartering animals and vegetables, the barter system was doomed to fail. Why? Well, you'll see through the 4 enormous advantages of money I'm about to explain. The first advantage is that financial transactions of any size can take place. An advantage that increased tremendously when paper money was introduced. For example, it's simple for a company to make a transaction involving millions or billions of dollars when using money. Second, transactions involving money can be done fast. People who have money can get it and transfer it to another person rapidly. This means that business can be conducted quickly. And now, of course, with electronic transactions, money can be moved over any distance in a flash. Third, money allows people to do business with anyone, across cultural or geographic boundaries. And this greatly expands business opportunities. Money truly enjoys universal acceptance. The fourth advantage is that the value of money is precise and consistent. Precise means that the value of money can be determined in exact ways. $5.49 or $5.51. Money is also consistent because the value of $1 is $1. It isn't subjective. And even when the value of a currency fluctuates, it fluctuates for everyone. Okay, let me say a few words about the evolution of money. Originally, money was a physical object found in nature, cattle and grains, for example. It then evolved to become a manufactured physical object, such as gold and silver coins. Next, money became something more abstract, something that is symbolic of physical objects, such as gold and silver. At this stage in its evolution, money became pieces of paper, such as paper money and stock certificates. While gold and silver coins have real value, paper doesn't because it's completely separated from what it once represented, gold. This was an enormous evolutionary leap because money moved from being a concrete physical object to being a symbolic abstract idea. And this idea worked only because people had a great deal of trust and faith in the principle. Okay. Now what about the benefits that have resulted from the invention of money? I'll cover three. The invention has benefited commerce, human initiative, and individual freedom. Traditionally, wealth was handed down from parent to child in the form of land. And because few people were landowners, few people had any hope of advancing a society or of becoming even moderately wealthy. However, as agriculture became increasingly efficient, more and more people abandoned farm work. These people began to live in cities and to make their livings by offering non-agricultural products and services. Money was the facilitator of this commerce because, as we just saw, money allows business people to sell goods to anyone, right? Second point, the rise of commerce increased individual initiative because wealth was no longer necessarily tied to heredity. Instead, brains and hard work became important. The result? Growing middle class and upper classes of relatively wealthy people. And thirdly, people working in non-agricultural businesses gained the freedom to choose their own futures. For example, education became accessible to many more people. As a result, they were better able to function independently and successfully. This further accelerated the growth of both new businesses and money. Can you see that? All right, to sum up, money is one of the greatest and most productive tools ever created by human beings. It's a tool that's strongly related to human and social development, to creativity, and, frankly, to turning dreams into reality. But the true source of all of these benefits is not money itself, because money is just an abstraction. Humans are the ones who give meaning to money, and through this very human use of trust and faith, millions of people have been able to live better, more comfortable, and more fulfilling lives.
Listen again.
Money. It's one of the greatest creations of human history and has played a positive role in the development of modern civilization. However, we haven't always used money. If we look back, say, more than 3,000 years ago, which is when coins first appeared, we would find that most people conducted business using a system of direct exchange called barter. For instance, I might exchange my 5 chickens for your 3 sheep. That's barter. Today, I'll be talking about some advantages of money over barter, how money has undergone change over time, and the benefits of money. Okay. In early societies, land and agriculture provided the main forms of wealth and power. How? Because only landowners could grow large amounts of food and raise large amounts of animals, such as cattle and sheep. Although people could carry out limited business transactions by bartering animals and vegetables, the barter system was doomed to fail. Why? Well, you'll see through the 4 enormous advantages of money I'm about to explain. The first advantage is that financial transactions of any size can take place, an advantage that increased tremendously when paper money was introduced. For example, it's simple for a company to make a transaction involving millions or billions of dollars when using money. Second, transactions involving money can be done fast. People who have money can get it and transfer it to another person rapidly. This means that business can be conducted quickly. And now, of course, with electronic transactions, money can be moved over any distance in a flash. Third, Money allows people to do business with anyone, across cultural or geographic boundaries. And this greatly expands business opportunities. Money truly enjoys universal acceptance. The fourth advantage is that the value of money is precise and consistent. Precise means that the value of money can be determined in exact ways. $5.49 or $5.51. Money is also consistent because the value of $1 is $1. It isn't subjective. And even when the value of a currency fluctuates, it fluctuates for everyone. Okay, let me say a few words about the evolution of money. Originally, money was a physical object found in nature, cattle and grains, for example. It then evolved to become a manufactured physical object, such as gold and silver coins. Next, money became something more abstract, something that is symbolic of physical objects, such as gold and silver. At this stage in its evolution, money became pieces of paper, such as paper money and stock certificates. While gold and silver coins have real value, paper doesn't because it's completely separated from what it once represented, gold. This was an enormous evolutionary leap because money moved from being a concrete physical object to being a symbolic abstract idea. And this idea worked only because people had a great deal of trust and faith in the principle. Okay, now what about the benefits that have resulted from the invention of money? I'll cover three. The invention has benefited commerce, human initiative, and individual freedom. Traditionally, wealth was handed down from parent to child in the form of land. And because few people were landowners, few people had any hope of advancing a society or of becoming even moderately wealthy. However, as agriculture became increasingly efficient, more and more people abandoned farm work. These people began to live in cities and to make their livings by offering non-agricultural products and services. Money was the facilitator of this commerce because, as we just saw, money allows business people to sell goods to anyone, right? Second point, the rise of commerce increased individual initiative because wealth was no longer necessarily tied to heredity. Instead, brains and hard work became important. The result? Growing middle class and upper classes of relatively wealthy people. And thirdly, people working in non-agricultural businesses gained the freedom to choose their own futures. For example, education became accessible to many more people. As a result, they were better able to function independently and successfully. This further accelerated the growth of both new businesses and money. Can you see that? All right, to sum up, money is one of the greatest and most productive tools ever created by human beings. It's a tool that's strongly related to human and social development, to creativity, and, frankly, to turning dreams into reality. But the true source of all of these benefits is not money itself, because money is just an abstraction. Humans are the ones who give meaning to money, and through this very human use of trust and faith, millions of people have been able to live better, more comfortable, and more fulfilling lives.
That's the end of the test.